And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm Dr. Morgan. Oh man, I'm ready to go. You don't know this, but I just set everything down and pushed the button like 2 seconds before I went on. That's hilarious. Okay, the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I'm really here to help. That's what my job is. I like it, though. You know what I find so fascinating is God has one of the most interesting designs. I know that doesn't do it justice. If I said that God is a genius, that doesn't really put into words exactly what's transpired here in his creation. But it's amazing. I'm going to quote a woman yesterday. She said, "I believe with all my heart that God has put natural medicines here on earth for us to help us." And I agreed with her, and I thought to myself, if we only knew. Which, what I mean by that is this. There's probably so many things that we just don't know that would benefit us because we haven't studied them. And so, you know, there's definitely a direction where money is spent today. And you can always tell by where the money goes and how expensive things are. And so it just depends on what a man focuses on or what a woman focuses on. Now, what I want to do is I want to share a little bit of research with you. I don't know that I'm really perfectly prepared on this topic, but I'm kind of diving into it. And I'm really enjoying the journey reading about how the blood works and blood flow dynamics and how things move in the body. To me, that's one of the most fascinating, interesting topics of all time. When I drove in here this morning, I thought I was looking at some trees, and I thought even they have their own circulatory system. Even the earth has its own. Well, going back to the tree for a second, how does a tree take water from 60 feet deep and pump it to the very top of its canopy, which is sometimes 100 feet above the ground? It's just amazing. That's because it has its own circulatory system. And how does a potato grow in the ground? Well, it's all about flow. As long as fluids and water are moving, everything's going to go really, really well. You know, if we looked at the bare fundamental for human life, well, you can't live without water. You know what the chemical designation of water is? It's H2O. So you've got two hydrogen molecules for one oxygen molecule. I know that sounds simple, but it's so interesting what water is composed of. Hydrogen and oxygen. Well, if you said, well, what is the other basic fundamental for human health and for human existence? Well, it's always the same thing. Besides water, you've got to have oxygen. Without oxygen, you don't have life. And so what I would think is, we would do really, really well to study, how does the body deal with oxygen? And so in looking at that, you know that the basic core essentials of human life is you got to have breath. When you inhale air into your lungs, it's not the diesel fumes that your body needs to be able to sustain life. It's not even the smell of the mimosa flower that's blooming on the mimosa trees right now, which they do smell pretty divine. They're awesome. You don't even need the smell of fresh baked bread. But what you need is you got to have oxygen. And so when we start talking about the circulatory system, it's the ocean of oxygen and nutrients that it can deliver to all the cells and glands and tissues and organs that make up the human body. That's it right there. Okay? Let me read this to you right here. And of course, you've heard me talk about this topic before, but I'm thinking we could actually reverse everything that we think that we know, and we could say, well, maybe that's not exactly true, that there might be another factor. So I think I've told you before in the past, like over and over again, because I find it so interesting that this is true, but America is actually not the world leader in diabetes. You would think that we are. I mean, if you go to the grocery store and just kind of look around, you go, okay, I think maybe that person right there might have some issues with diabetes. But we don't. It's a country, India. And this still blows my mind. You know what the average level of hemoglobin A1C is in India? It's incredible. It's 9.2. If you're living here in America, you would say anything above 5.7 would be some, to a varying degree, a version of diabetes. And it could be everything from just very, very mild expressions of diabetes or poor blood sugar control, but it can be a lot higher. I mean, if you're waking up this morning and your total blood sugar is 423 milligrams per deciliter of glucose, then you've got really, really high glucose. By the way, I laughed just then. That ain't funny. I wasn't laughing because of that. It's just sometimes I'm shocked at what a human body can tolerate. And I've seen plenty of people where they show me their labs and their triglycerides are 800. And the blood sugar is 4.25. And I look at the lab results and I go, how could they even still be alive? That's just incredible. But you know what? There's more than one factor when it comes to health. Your body has all these systems, of course, created and designed by the master designer, that would be God. They can take up the slack and they can fill in the gaps. When you have one organ system that's struggling, you can have another one that does its job at trying to make sure that you can stay alive. But going back to India for a second, if they have a religious belief that it's wrong to eat beef because they believe in reincarnation, I mean, that's their choice, that's their call. I don't share the same belief, but you know what? Maybe I'm biased. Maybe I need to change my opinion on the matter, but I don't believe in reincarnation. I believe you only get one shot at this life. And so, but if you believe that if your Uncle Henry passes away, and that he may be reincarnated as a cow, then what you may be left with is, why would I want to eat a steak or a pound of ground beef? Or why would I make a salad that has beef strips in it? Well, you're probably not going to. But one of the things that's been shown is across the board when they measure the blood values of people that are from India. And by the way, I have met some of the most beautiful, amazing people from India. They're so intelligent and so smart. I think they try really, really hard, and it shows. You can always tell when you have a group of people that don't try. Maybe that's the current generation. I don't know. I'll let you decide. But when they measure their vitamin B12 levels, quite often they have absolutely the lowest on the planet. Well, why would that be? Well, it may be because they're not eating meat. And so if you look at, and this is just an example, if you looked at beef liver, not everybody likes that. I know, it's kind of the running joke around here, but I'm telling you the truth. Your liver is supposed to hold on to about a 4 to 5 year reserve of vitamin B12. I didn't really plan on talking about B12 this morning, but can I just suggest this to you? You can't live without it. You can't. And so typically, yeah, it's true, diabetes is a classic vitamin B12 deficiency disease. And so what might one person see when they're low in B12? Well, their nervous system doesn't rejuvenate so well. How about that? So it could be everything from a loss of cognition, which means their mind does not process information and remember names and faces the way that it used to. Does that make sense? Or you may not be able to recall some information that you need to know, but you have, quote, forgotten it, or you're having a hard time bringing it back up to where you can use it and take advantage of that information that you've learned. Or what if somebody has what's called a neuropathy, where they have burning or numbness or tingling in their feet or their legs? Is that common in America? Oh, my word. You don't even know. It's everybody, just about. Well, when you get to be a certain age. Anyway, here's my point. Even though, and I'm looking at this research right here, and they measure the average hemoglobin A1C for those in India that have diabetes, and it's like 9.2, and I'm going, Well, that's out of control. I don't like the sound of that. That's like worse here than America. Well, let me read this to you right here. And I'm trying to think, where did I get this from? I don't have the reference. But anyway, what they're saying is, even though they have pretty advanced diabetes in India, I think that in India, that represents 63% of all the cases of diabetes on the entire planet are in India. So I'm thinking that we could learn something from this. But what they're saying is, even though their blood sugar is relatively high, like a hemoglobin A1C at 9.2, and that's bad, that ain't good, that needs to be changed. If they're going to have the next generation of workers to work in the factories and businesses and on the farms and providing all the services and all the products that people desire and need to live, they're going to have people that are capable of working. It's really as simple as that. And I guess the other point that I'm thinking of in my mind is, what happens when we have an entire generation of people who are so sick and they're so physically degenerated that they can't work for a living? You talk about the scariest statistic to me, or one of them, is you have the greatest aging population of all time. And I guess the way that I'm referring to this is when you have a certain part of the population that no longer can work and perform and earn a living, that's going to be your aged population. They just get to a point where they can't go to a factory job any longer. Does that make sense? Well, you know where that exists today, where they have just literally earth-shattering numbers of people that no longer work or participate in holding jobs or going to work and earning a paycheck. And so it changes all the dynamics of the economy. Well, that country is China. It is terrifying. It's got to be terrifying for Chinese leadership looking at the number of people they have that they need to support and care for. And I'm not trying to get into all the dynamics of that, but the last time I checked, if you're alive, you like to drink water and you like to eat. Well, to the best of my knowledge, the Chinese people, they love their pork. Well, I don't really remember the name of the virus, but I heard it last week. It's probably like akin to the swine flu, but I think it's a variant that's causing the lungs to liquefy, which means blood's coming out of the nose and the eyes. Makes you think of like the Ebola outbreak in the Congo. Well, they just had to destroy in China 2/3 of their hog or their pig population. Well, what are they going to eat now? And I read a report the other day that they just purchased this very expensive premium wheat crop from northern France. Well, from what I can tell, they paid quite a bit more than probably what the market rate was. That means they wanted it really bad. Well, you don't have to be a genius to figure this stuff out. They are desperate for food. And so they've got this tremendous aging population, and they're no longer working, and so they still want to eat. So you just do the math on that. Anyway, I'm getting off topic here slightly. But going back to India and looking at all the diabetes, well, there's a condition that you're going to see called a retinopathy. And if you want to call that macular degeneration But the bottom line is this: you're just not getting enough oxygen and nutrients to the cells that make up the retina or the macula. And I know I'm making this sound very simplistic, but you know what the number one cause of blindness is here in America or North America? Well, it's macular degeneration. Well, what causes the macula to degenerate? Well, let me give you just a little bit of a clue here. If your macula or your retina doesn't get enough oxygen to meet its needs, I don't know if you've ever heard this concept in science or biology, but without oxygen, you can't produce energy. The basic unit of life is you've got to have water, you've got to have oxygen, and then you've got to have fuel. So inside of every cell of your body, you have a very interesting structure known as a mitochondria. Some cells have a lot more mitochondria than others, like a heart cell. I think the one that has absolutely the most mitochondria is the is the female egg that she produces each month. You know how when a woman has a menstrual cycle, she will actually release an egg, but I think an egg has been shown to have about 20,000 mitochondria. By the way, the sperm only has 16. I think that's right. And so what happens when the sperm joins the egg, it's really all energy production in the human body comes from the mitochondria. So basically, you inherit your mitochondria from your mama. You don't get any from your dad. I think the 16 mitochondria that are in the sperm, they've been shown to shed and just they're cast off once the DNA from the sperm and the egg join together. So here we have the situation in India where they have like a boatload of diabetes and blood sugar problems, but they don't exactly experience the same amount of retinopathy or macular degeneration or diabetic complications in the eye like people from Europe do. I mean, if you look at the people in Europe, they have twice as much macular degeneration as people in India, but they have less diabetes. And so here's the question. Can it be or could it be that maybe all the amazing spices that are used in the Indian diet, despite their blood sugar problems, might have some tremendous benefit on your microcirculation, meaning the dynamics of capillary blood flow? Do you know what they are? Anybody ever heard of turmeric or curcumin? I just absolutely love curry sauce. I've had so many people laugh at me because I do like it hot and spicy, but if you look at my face, my eyes will water, and my nose will start to run. That's not real attractive, by the way, at a restaurant, to somebody sniffling. Or you might feel it in your throat like, oh my word, this is so hot and spicy. So between curry sauce and cayenne pepper and maybe the use of ginger, you know that ginger has a bite. It's strong stuff. But what they're showing now is, what if all these herbs and spices, what they really do is, they do their job. They help improve blood flow. And it's just amazing the amount of research. And so if you were to ask me, well, Dr. Morgan, you're really way off topic talking about ginger and turmeric and garlic and fish oil and pomegranate and green tea. Because there's drugs that the medical profession has that are just like utterly amazing. They're called Xarelto and Plavix and what's another one? Warfarin or Coumadin. Okay, all right, well, I didn't prepare to talk about those, but if that's what you want, guess what? You get to choose. But I like to think that if you hear some information about maybe an herb that improves your blood flow or circulation, if there is one time that you might want to sit up and take notice and take out your sheet of paper and write something down, well, it might be right now. So that's one thing that the people from India do. They consume a lot more spices than what we do typically, even though that on their lab values, their diabetes is a lot worse. Well, they don't suffer all the retinopathies like we do here in America. Now, let me read this to you right here. This is pretty easy to understand. Now, this study comes from China. Can I just read this to you? Okay. Just pay attention to this and see if you can put it together. Consumption of spicy foods was inversely associated with total mortality and deaths from cancer, heart disease, respiratory disease in a large population-based cohort study conducted in China. Okay? Are you with me on that? That means the more spicy food they consumed was associated of not dying from cancer and not dying from heart disease and not dying from stuff like emphysema and COPD and asthma. You got it? Okay. Here's the other part of the study right here. And this is really, you gotta hang on to this one right here. It said higher fresh fruit consumption was found to reduce type 2 diabetes incidence as well as microvascular and microvascular complications. And this was a 7-year prospective study of how many? Only 500,000 Chinese adults, which is contrary to the traditional belief held within the Chinese population that if you eat too much fruit, you're going to get diabetes. Okay. Do you get what I'm saying here? You've got to be able to deliver oxygen and blood flow to the cells. It's as really as simple as that. If you can't do that, then you can't live. And so what we start, and I think this is a topic that I really, really want to study and flesh out a bit more because it's so fascinating to me. And so what if you say that you're a physician or you're a nurse and you want to help people? Well, let me tell you how you do that. You get more oxygen and nutrition to the cells of your patients. That's how you do it. That's the one thing that's proven to work. And so let's discuss this a little bit further. Here's a study that I came across right here. And where did this come from? Well, okay, I look these things up and I'll make a copy of it, but I don't always copy the reference point because sometimes the studies are so long. But listen to this right here. When they gave green tea, which the scientific name of green tea is Camellia sinensis, and yes, I did look it up, you can buy seeds and plant your own tea bush, and you could grow tea anytime that you want to. And see, the reason I know that is because my sister was telling me about a show on television is from Mississippi, and they had a tea plantation there in a tea room. I thought that was totally cool. Listen to this right here. They gave green tea for 2 weeks to smokers. And so I don't know if you know what this represents, but smokers, they got the worst circulation. They just do. I'm not picking on smokers. I mean, if anybody knows what it's like to inhale nonstop secondhand smoke, it's me. I'm very sympathetic. If I'm driving down the road with my father and it's cold outside, guess who's going to get the secondhand smoke? Yeah, me. Well, he got the first-hand smoke, I guess, because he's the one inhaling it. Okay, so the way they tested the blood flow is they had a device that measured blood flow in their forearm, easy to access. Anyway, it's so technical. It just tells us basically through numbers that when you consume green tea, that greatly improves blood flow in the arteries and the veins and the capillaries of your forearm. Okay, that's a home run. All right. Now, this is the one that I really, really was intrigued by, if I can get to it. Okay. So here's what I want you to hold in your mind. We're talking about blood flow here. And so let me read this article to you. And there's a lot more to it than what I'm telling you, but this right here is just real straight and to the point. The article starts off saying there are major changes in the microcirculation of the liver when you age. That means aging. And so the vast majority of people that are listening to this program right now are not six-month-old children and one-year-old children. I have a large following of infants, but it's probably the vast majority of my listeners are older people. People that are just a little bit past, 4 years of age, okay? So the major changes in microcirculation of the liver with aging is going to include increased endothelial cell thickness. What that means is your capillaries, they become thicker. They're not thin. Reduced numbers of pores. The scientific term they're using now is called fenestrations. That just means the reduced number of pores in your arteries, and you're thinking, why are you talking about holes that occur in your capillaries? Well, we're fixing to find out. Such changes are thought to contribute to dyslipidemia. That, in that word right there, dyslipidemia. Have you ever heard of a blood test called a lipid profile? What is a lipid profile? Well, that's going to be measuring your total cholesterol. That's going to be measuring your triglycerides, your HDL, your LDL, your VLDL. Some of the smarter doctors or nurses are choosing to order what's called a ferritin level or uric acid or homocysteine because all these can have an extremely adverse effect upon your lifespan and your blood flow. And so besides dyslipidemia, which is what every physician that I know of wants to measure first and foremost, see, there you go. They're talking about blood flow and circulation. But the angle is, what can we do to recommend a statin drug? So just think this through. So when a person ages, you start seeing blood fats change. Did I say flats? I meant to say blood fats. That's cholesterol, triglycerides, all that stuff. You start seeing vascular disease, liver degeneration, and poor drug metabolism. Now, that part gets me because do you know what story I hear over and over again? This is what a person says. They say, Dr. Morgan, I cannot tolerate drugs like other people can. You just have to give me just a little bit. If they give me the normal prescribed dose compared to other people, my body can't take it. And so I make a note of that. I'm thinking to myself, okay, what does that mean? Well, you're fixing to find out. Here's an article in the newspaper called The Australian in the year 2006. And it's written by a journalist by the name of Jill Margot. And she noted the following about this research about the liver and the microcirculation. We're just talking about the vascular bed made up of capillaries. And I'm going to read her article right here. Australian researchers have made a discovery that could prove beneficial to millions of older people. That means most of my listeners, okay? Through identifying how an aging liver is starved of oxygen, they believe they may have uncovered an important factor in susceptibility to age-related diseases, including coronary artery diseases and nervous system disorders such as Parkinson's. What they found has never been described before. They discovered that with age, tiny blood vessels in the liver undergo microscopic changes that can potentially translate into major diseases. Associate Professor David Le Couture, a geriatrician and clinical pharmacologist at the Canberra School, he says, a young, healthy liver has unique blood vessels. Unlike vessels anywhere else in the body, they are very thin and full of holes, and they look rather like a wire mesh in a fly screen. What I think of is a cheese grater, full of holes. This mesh allows oxygen being carried in the blood to pass effortlessly into the liver cell, where it is used to fuel the metabolic processes. With age, Dr. Le Couture says, this fine mesh-like structure changes dramatically. The vessels thicken, the holes close off, and an underlying basement membrane develops. What does this mean? Well, this means less oxygen can get through and the liver cells have less oxygen to do their metabolic work. That includes processing toxins produced by the body. And yeah, I don't know if you know what this means, but here's what it means. The researcher's theory suggests that in old age, these substances, meaning toxins, but if you want to insert the word a pharmaceutical drug or an antibiotic or a chemical used to sweeten the Diet Coke called Splenda or aspartame, well, here's what, or if you want to say your cholesterol, especially cholesterol that's been oxidized, it means that in old age that all these chemicals that I just mentioned, they can bypass the liver. You know what that means, folks? That means the liver doesn't stand a chance at cleaning the toxins from your blood. And what happens to them? Well, here's what the article says. These toxins then deposit themselves elsewhere in the body where they can cause harm. Some fats may, for example, accumulate in the coronary artery, while a particular family of toxins might travel to the brain where they congregate and later they manifest, perhaps, as Parkinson's disease, which I don't know if you've seen the latest research. They know without a doubt now that Parkinson's disease is completely caused by a breakdown in the integrity of the gut. And you know what? The liver is part of the gut. But what this article is saying is, if you can't get enough oxygen and nutrients to fuel the liver cells, then guess what they can't do? They cannot clean your blood and remove toxins from it. And that means the rest of your body is going to be overwhelmed. And so, folks, let me tell you what this really means. That means we're headed for like a catastrophic nightmare of health problems down the road in America. Because if you don't get to the root cause of a problem, what have you got? You just got more pharmaceuticals. So you tell me, what's going to happen to a liver that doesn't have great microvascular circulation where they have generous amounts of oxygen and nutrients fueling the liver itself so it can do its job? Well, the article just told you. If you cannot remove old oxidized cholesterol that's broken down and resting inside of your body, well, guess what's going to happen? It's going to do its job, which is to naturally accumulate in the coronary arteries of the heart. Who wants that? Well, I don't want it, and you don't want it. And so we've got to come up with ways that we can improve blood flow and circulation. Now, some of the other research that I'm trying to study right now, and I'm looking at articles, it is so intriguing. It's saying that in our understanding of how the body works and how healing takes place, we've got it completely wrong. It's not that diabetes causes all these vascular changes. It's not that heart disease or coronary artery disease causes all these problems. The problem is when the vascular bed or the capillaries, but they become damaged and they become thickened, and then you can't get oxygen to the cells, what's going to happen? They're going to break down. That's the problem. So in a roundabout way, one of the things that we have to address, no matter what condition you're dealing with a health problem, you've got to improve blood flow and circulation. You're just going to have to get that in your head. I'm getting it in my head right now. I'm beating it into my hard, thick skull because I want to make sure that I master and learn this. The bottom line is, if you're going to be about restoring your health, you've got to improve your blood flow and circulation. Does that make sense? Do you realize how much better you are on every level if you can just get more oxygen to your ovaries if you're a woman? I guess if you're a woman and you have your monthly menstrual flow and it's like dark black or brown, which is like a frequent color that women describe to me, you know what the normal color of a female menses is? It's bright red. It's almost the color of a pomegranate. But if a woman says, my blood is brown or black and I have chunks and clots, well, folks, that's one thing. That's low oxygen. What are you going to have when you have low oxygen? Well, you're always going to have cramps. And for a woman to experience horrible menstrual cramps starting a week before she starts her cycle, and she's got to lay in bed for 2 weeks because the cramps are so severe and so bad, well, that ain't good. What do we need? We need more blood flow. We need better circulation. You know, one of the things that can totally screw up circulation in the human body, chronic infections do. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. You talk about a way to steal all your resources for themselves. That's like the whole topic of this new field of study called long haulers. I find it so intriguing of all these people that have had COVID, but they just can't get well. And almost all of them, they complain of everything from severe brain fog, and they can't think clearly, and they have horrific fatigue. But most of them, they have issues resulting from liver problems, kidney problems, and heart problems. Well, what is that related to? Well, it's related to blood flow and circulation. So unless we start addressing every health issue like it's a circulatory problem, then I really wonder how much great success and efficiency we're going to have at curing people of their problems. Okay, let me read this to you right here. You see, some of these studies that I like, they're real small, which means they really didn't have a lot of money to do them. When you find a study and they do 500,000 people, that means they had money. Somebody had to fund it. But listen to this right here. A study in 19 active people found that ingesting 1,000 milligrams of pomegranate extract 30 minutes before working out increased blood flow, blood vessel diameter, and exercise performance. You get that? Well, why would that be? Well, one of the ideas behind pomegranate is maybe it contains a compound called a flavonoid. Sometimes they're called anthocyanidins. And so these are compounds that God has created in the plant, whether it's a blueberry, a cranberry, a grape, green tea, chocolate, or like what I'm discussing here, is the pomegranate. Well, pomegranates are extremely high in what we might call polyphenol antioxidants. They also have nitrates in them, which when you put these into the body, and see, that's the whole key. You know, I'm just sort of joking here, but unless you get the pomegranate into your mouth and swallow it, it don't work. I can't believe Coca-Cola doesn't have, like, pomegranate-flavored Coca-Cola instead of Cherry Coke, pomegranate Coke. Anyway, I'm just joking. Who knows? Maybe they're probably the executives are listening to my program, and they said, oh, my word, now we know why we want to do a pomegranate red Coca-Cola. Anyway, so if you're listening to me right now and you hear a study about that 19 active people, these are healthy people, if they can ingest 1,000 milligrams of pomegranate extract 30 minutes before they work out, and they're able to measure this is greater blood flow. Now, you know what this really means. When you get better blood flow, that means you're delivering more oxygen and nutrition to the cells and the organs and tissues, and maybe that organ is a joint, like cartilage, ligaments, tendons, bone, or what if that's your muscles? What if you're running from a pack of wolves through the forest at night, and you got to have just a little bit extra strength to get away from them? I know that would be a fantasy dream. Most likely a human can't really outrun a pack of wolves. I don't know if you remember the story of Sue Aiken, how she shot that wolf up in the Arctic Circle, and it was like 9 feet and 3 inches long and weighed 253 pounds. No, I don't think Roy is going to outrun a wolf. But if I could climb a tree because I'm getting better blood flow and oxygen because of pomegranate juice, then I'll take it. But today it's so easy. It's easy in that if you want to go to the store and buy a pomegranate, you can. If you want to go to the store and look in the refrigerated section and purchase pomegranate juice, well, you can do that too. Well, what if you don't like those options? What if you said, hey, Dr. Morgan, I'm going to go back to your study on green tea. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I have a quick question, and then I'll get off the phone and let you talk. My question is, how do you fix chronic anal fissures without having surgery?
There's only one way. You've got to increase blood flow and nutrient delivery. It's the only way a fissure can heal. You want me to tell you what I would do?
Tell me.
If it was me, I would do 3 or 4 things, but let me give you the emergency measures of what I would do. I'm not telling you to do this. I'm promoting this like what Roy Morgan would do, okay?
Okay.
There is a product called Chlorophyll Complex. And if I'm not mistaken, it's not the water-soluble form of chlorophyll. That's what's commonly available everywhere. So, like, for example, if you said, I would like some spirulina powder, or I would like to take some chlorella tablets, which those are good, but that's all water-soluble chlorophyll. The fat-soluble chlorophyll can be concentrated into a very powerful extract that when you apply that to the area that's damaged, meaning it has very low levels of oxygen,
okay. Then
all of a sudden healing can start to take place. Now, what I would do if it were me is, every night at bedtime, I would do what's called a chlorophyll complex suppository. And so I'm not trying to be overly graphic, but use your imagination. You might use olive oil or coconut oil just to gently lubricate it, but you're trying to insert a little bit of gelatin pearl that's filled with this rich fat-soluble chlorophyll to the area. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So every night when you go to bed, that's on your to-do list. Make sure that you apply the chlorophyll in the form of a suppository. I'm really talking about myself here, so I'm not recommending anything to you. I mean, I'll let your medical doctor do that since they're in charge of healing your suppository. I mean, the fissure. Okay. So to make a long story short, if you do that night after night for about 1 week, I am positive that you might report back to me and tell me that you've seen some amazing results.
Okay.
The next thing is this. You've got to set your mind like Flint that you've got to do everything that you can to avoid sugar, like it's the Black Death or like a case of monkeypox. Do you want monkeypox?
No.
Then
avoid
sugar the same way you don't want monkeypox. And so if you don't have anything that's sugary, you're making it much easier for your body to heal. Now, the other thing that I really look at, now, I could have done this if this was back in the year 1988 or 1989 when I was in the microbiology lab at the university. Because then what we could do is we could take a fecal sample and I could use good technique, but I could apply that to what's called nutrient auger in a petri dish. And I could mark it with your name on it, and we could stick it in the incubator, and 3 days later, we're trying to find out if your body is harboring any type of toxic microorganisms that are completely counterproductive to healing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if somebody walked into my office and they said, why do I get urinary tract infections over and over again? I had one last week, and now I'm taking an antibiotic, and guess what's going to happen 2 months later? They're going to have it all over again. Well, they know now that you can kill all the urinary tract-causing infections with an antibiotic. Yeah, they can do that. But it doesn't do anything to kill what's called the biofilms of the toxic bacteria that are living in your lower colon. Because a biofilm is like this slimy, gunky, stinky, sticky substance that the bacteria just crawls under and it hides from antibiotics and from your immune system. But the term technically is called a biofilm. Have you ever heard that?
No.
Well, most likely with a fissure that won't heal, there are biofilms down there. Guess what helps your body destroy biofilms? Garlic, curcumin, curry, turmeric, ginger. I do want to say oregano, but I've got to warn you, oregano is so strong. If you overdo it, you could burn a hole in your stomach with the stuff. It's that powerful. Don't do that. And so you've got to break down the biofilm. So I think that you know where I'm going with this. What I would do is I would say, okay, what can I eat today? Even though it's going to give me stinky, stinky garlic breath, what am I going to do? Well, I'm going to eat garlic. One of my favorite old-time remedies is just taking raw garlic cloves and you pour raw honey on all over them and let them ferment for about a month. Then you start eating a couple of those every day.
Huh.
You ever heard that before?
My mom eats garlic every day.
How old is your mother?
72.
Is she in good working order?
Overall, yes.
Okay, then we're going to use her as our example. Way to go, 72-year-old mama. You did great. And so you got to break down those biofilms that are growing around the fissure, because what that's doing is it's preventing your body from healing. Now let me go on to my next topic.
Okay.
Some of these bacteria that live under the biofilms, they're so toxic and so persistent, you can't even kill them with antibiotics anymore. And sometimes if you look at the news studies, you'll find out, oh no, they found a new strain of fungus that we've never seen in America before. It's been in Europe, but it's never been over here, but now we've got it. And it doesn't respond to any drugs. Well, drugs, yes, but if you generously start working your onions and your garlic and you avoid sugar and you consume turmeric and you take in ginger extracts and green tea and pomegranate, and did I mention the dark chocolate part yet?
No.
So If somebody that loves you says, oh, look at this, this is 85% cacao, you got to have it, I approve. Take it. Get some blood flow. But you've got to increase blood flow and circulation, which means you've got to find a way to move your body. It's unlikely that you're going to sit on a skinny seat of a bicycle with a fissure. But maybe you can walk every day, right?
It's been hard even walking.
Well, can you get a recumbent bicycle where you sit down and just pedal your little feet off? You're going to have to. There's no other way around it. Unless you're exercising, I'm just being real direct with you. I kind of go through this all day long where people look at me and they go, Dr. Morgan, I really can't exercise because peeling bananas takes up my whole day. And then I say to them, would you please explain how peeling a banana takes your whole day? And they go, well, it's really hard, Dr. Morgan. You got to grab it and pull down. It just takes a long time. And I said, you mean 5 seconds? And they go, yeah. And so what I'm saying is, we can make all the excuses in the world. What I want you to do is, I want you to think about James, the half-brother of Jesus. Okay. Well, what did he say? He said, you tell me about your faith, but what I do is I show you my faith through my works. And that means doing is a lot better than talking about it. So that's all I want you to do is, I want you to do it. Unless you can get on a recumbent bicycle and pedal for 90 minutes a day, you can't come back to me and say, Dr. Morgan, your brilliant plan didn't work. And then I'm going to counter to you and say, well, are you getting blood flow to the anal fissure? And you're going to say, I have too much things to do, Dr. Morgan, like peeling a banana. You know I'm just joking when I say this stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
But I hear excuses all day long that are pretty much the equivalent of peeling a banana. And it could be everything. Well, I have to sort my socks. And I'm going, sweetheart, it's not the word priority. If we use the word priority, that makes it things like you give a person the idea that it's optional. Well, oxygen is not optional. And so you have to do what it takes to get oxygen to the area that needs to be healed. And you know what? If your doctor would put you in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, that would heal this. Because what he could do is he could say, Mrs. Gutierrez, we're going to put you in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, and we're going to crank it up to 100% oxygen at 5 atmospheres of pressure. Then you would have healing. Now, to the best of my knowledge, that's what the modern hospitals do today. If you got a wound that won't heal, like a sore on your leg or an infection somewhere that won't go away, then they'll put you in the hyperbaric oxygen chamber. Only after they've done 67,000 million rounds of antibiotics, which I think is borderline ridiculous. But you got to get blood flow and oxygen. So I know this is hard, but we're going to have to find something. You tell me, what is the most likely? I mean, if you went to any of the websites that sell things online, whether it's Walmart.com or Amazon.com or eBay, I mean, I'm kind of exposing. I know next to nothing about computers, and I'm going to keep it that way if I can. Because computers make you lazy. I don't want to be lazy. I want to dig into a book and figure it out. But you could buy bicycle pedals right now. Okay. And you could wear, and you could just put them in front of your chair. I mean, do you ever sit down?
Well, that's the thing. I'm not able to sit down anymore because it hurts so much.
Well, tell me, what do you do throughout the day then? Okay, well, then what we're going to do is we're going to get some of those portable bicycle pedals, and guess what you're going to do? You're going to pedal your little legs off while you're lying down.
Okay.
Can you do that? Okay.
I can do that.
There we go. And if you need to put a towel under you or a cushion, let's do that.
Okay.
But we're living in reality here, which means you tell me you want to get well, but we're not getting oxygen to the fissure. How's that going to work? That's called a complete fail. I don't want you to fail. Well, and the thing of it is, if you understand the rules now, but it's going to take literally 90 minutes. And so what you're going to do is you're going to counter with me and you're going to say, I can't do 90 minutes in bed. I'm going to say, deal. You got the first 10 hours of your day, we'll do 9 minutes an hour. So 10 times 9 is 90. Bingo, we just got there.
I like that.
Okay, good. Okay. And so that's like 3 or 4 things. The other thing is this right here. Vitamin A, Now, this is my opinion. Anybody else can argue all they want with me, but that's fine. But if they can top it, let me know. But you're going to have vitamin A if you're going to heal that.
Okay.
Guess what the highest source of vitamin A of all time is, food-wise? Beef liver.
What is... Oh.
So guess what you're having for breakfast today? A taco with cucumbers, tomatoes, lots of onions and garlic, all the hot sauce your heart wants. I just told you about cayenne pepper. That greatly increases blood flow to that area of the body. So would you eat a liver taco? We can even put some chicken in there and beef if you want to make it taste better.
Wow. Well, I've been taking biotin, vitamin C, zinc.
Those are two brilliant things right there. You're right on track. Vitamin C and zinc. Way to go. That's a very good choice on your part. You did great.
What about vitamin B? Do I need to?
Well, you'll get that if you'll just eat the liver.
Okay.
I think I heard the air go out from behind your sails.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know what? Do what other people do. Mix it into ground beef and make a liver meatloaf. You won't even know what's in there.
And I'm going to do what you said. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. You want to join me on the radio? There's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. I think what we need to do is just remove all the emotions. Let's just look at this whole thing objectively. Is what you're doing working right now? Okay? That's the whole purpose of asking for help or asking for a question, is what is the plan that's going to work? And so maybe one of the main points that I want to like nail or hammer home today is you've got to be able to get oxygen to these tissues in order for it to work. I mean, after all, you've got these teeny tiny microscopic structures in all the cells of your body, whether it's a brain cell, a pituitary cell, thyroid cell, kidney cell. They're called mitochondria. If you cannot get oxygen and nutrients and protein and fat into the mitochondria, then explain to me, how are you going to overcome your problems or how are you going to heal? And that's a real challenge. Good morning and welcome to the program. All right. Can you hear me now? There we go. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Are you driving down the road? Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
okay,
you're welcome.
So I'm calling a quick question. I have taken some steroids in the beginning of the month or of last month, and now I had a steroid shot today, a couple of days ago for a hip. So I was wondering, how can I rid myself of having these steroids? I don't want to have any more of this, but I want to get well. So it's increased blood flow. I heard that, mm-hmm. and that sounds great. So I'm going to be trying that. But I want to clear my body with all this steroid stuff.
Well, that's the job of your liver. And so if you would prayerfully consider things like drinking herbal tea, like green tea or hibiscus tea or dandelion tea, that would help.
Great.
There is a common herb. It's growing everywhere in all the bar ditches. It's called milk thistle.
Okay.
The technical name is Silymarin. There's nothing silly about it. It's very serious. No, I'm just joking. But if you take milk thistle, that's very hepatoprotective, and it helps you accomplish what you want. The other things that I would look at is, man, I'm telling you, you can't beat them. It's called turmeric, ginger, and pomegranate.
There you go. Okay.
And I know this is my diabolical plot because I haven't contacted the Pomegranate Association Business Owners of America group yet, but I'm thinking I can work a deal where I can, if I can get 1% of all sales, I'll be a billionaire by the weekend.
I bet you will.
Well, they haven't returned my phone calls yet. No, I'm just joking. So, no, but the interesting thing is, all these flavonoid compounds, they're all there for your healing. So everything that God has made for us, it has a purpose and a benefit.
Fantastic.
And then you better go eat at a chocolate bar, too.
Chocolate bar. That's great. I'm all for it. Thank you for all you're doing.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
I think if I were to give you like an add-on, I am so hard-pressed with any type of a liver issue not to recommend onions and avocados. You know what that means that you absolutely have to do today? I mean, you have no choice. You have to go buy fresh avocados and cut up an onion. And if you want to put jalapenos in there, remember the study from China that showed that when the more spicy foods you have, the less risk of dying. I mean, all these people that are eating spicy foods and are still alive, they can't be wrong, can they? Anyway, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. If nobody calls, let me see what I can do right here. Where is it? That's not the right one. Okay. This is a study of 4,628 people who consumed the most ginger. This is opposed to people that did not consume any ginger at all. Okay, they had 2 to 4 grams a day. They had the lowest risk of developing high blood pressure. And how do you like them apples? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Morgan.
Yes, sir.
I just got a quick remedy for people who don't like liver.
Man, oh, hang on. I've got my pen and paper ready. I'm ready to go. What is it?
You get liver that's sliced thin,
mm-hmm.
and you cut it in long strips. You put it in a bowl and some extra virgin olive oil on it,
mm-hmm.
and then you put garlic salt, seasonal salt, anything like that on it that you think you'll like. Put it on a really hot grill. It changes the color, the texture, and the taste. It's great.
Oh, how do you get that into your mouth?
Well, you take it off the grill and take a knife and a fork to it and enjoy it.
You mean you don't use a taco?
No tacos. I suppose you could.
I mean, that would be plan B, but you could just take it straight from the grill and do something with it, right?
Yeah, I used to use it for appetizers at gatherings and stuff.
It sounds like the old remedy, the old recipe called liver sticks.
Well, I never heard of liver stick, but no.
I think they use all sorts of spices like ginger and nutmeg and maybe some garlic, too. That's a brilliant plan. Thank you for sharing that with us.
No problem.
Can I ask you one personal question before you go?
Sure.
What is your chronological age, do you mind if I ask?
I'm in my 76th year.
Well, because when I hear your voice, it sounds like you might be a little bit closer to 48.
Well, no, I'm not, but God has blessed me, and I try to be a good steward with the things that He's given me, and that starts with my mind and my body.
We're going to follow your example today. That's great advice.
Well, it's just something that we all need to do.
It is.
God has a purpose for us, and He will use us if we're available.
And if you have oxygen going to your brain, there's a chance you can be usable, right?
Yeah.
You know what I like? I like the idea of if God uses you, everything works out great for His glory. But if man uses you for his own selfish intentions, it never works out well, does it?
No, it doesn't. But there's one thing that I would really like more people to know, and they ain't hearing enough of it in church, is that God's purpose for each and every one of us is as good as it's ever going to get on this earth.
Yes. What's the number one thing we should do if we attend church tomorrow?
We should pray for God's will to be done in our lives.
Amen. Should we ask for forgiveness for our nation?
Absolutely. But I, like a lot of people, have been praying for a long time for awakenings and revivals to start, not just in this nation, but all nations of the world.
Absolutely, yes. We need God's mercy and forgiveness for our great wickedness and for our sins of our nation and the world, too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it so much, and I pray that you have a great weekend, and God bless.
You too.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Bye.